This is also a throwback to 2018 and that we're fully just having personal conversations on air that we're just going to have to cut large swaths of.
I'm drinking, and also it's Patreon. Can the cold open just be that?
Yes, absolutely.
First intro of 2021, let's go. Welcome to the Iced Tea Podcast After Show, the after show where we spill the tea about things that may or may not be figure skating. Also, if they're figure skating, they may or may not be recent figure skating. I'm Netta.
I'm Megan. How are you, Netta? Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. It's snowing, or it was.
Wow.
Yeah, it's still snowing a little bit, so I'm cozy.
That's beautiful and incredible. We're just having, like, above freezing and also very sunny, weird, like, crisp days, which is not bad, but it's definitely not like the winter wonderland that I'm hoping for.
Yeah, well, a lot of things were not what we hoped for this year, so in because we really missed covering a Grand Prix final and there wasn't one, we decided to go back to our early days, our very beginnings, and cover the 2018 Grand Prix final, which we never actually got to cover because that was our lost episode and we missed it.
Yeah, correct. I was just trying to find my notes for that episode, for the lost episode, and I couldn't find them.
Wait, if you hold on 1 second, I'm gonna just grab my notebook. I actually think I probably have them. Wait, can I read you this cute little diary entry I just found in here?
Yes, please.
Okay, Tuesday, January 1st, 2019. There's like other stuff, but I'll start in the middle. Beautiful weather today, an almost warm enough to feel spring-like. Wow. That doesn't even make sense when it's correct. Anyway, in the evening, I rewatched the ladies' free skate from the Grand Prix final with Netta to practice for our podcast.
Aww.
Isn't that cute?
Cute! We practiced for our podcast.
I don't think I have notes actually from that Grand Prix final now that I'm looking. The earliest ones I have are from US Nats 2019, but I am glad I found that journal entry where I was like, we're going to start a podcast.
That's so precious. I'm so happy you have that. What is this? December 2018. Oh, Jesus Christ. Remember when it was December 2018?
Barely.
Actually, I don't have those notes either. I did find my US Nationals notes. So that's going to be fun one day when we revisit that. Ooh, I was shady.
Yeah, we used to be mean.
God, remember when we wanted to be mean?
Yeah, well, we outgrew that.
No, we were never mean. I just think we were less aware of...
We just didn't realize that people were going to listen and, like, hear what we said. And once I realized that anyone was going to hear what we said, I was like, oh, I don't actually want to say mean things.
So that's where I'm at. Okay, it's 2021, which feels insane. But it's 2018, in our hearts.
It is always 2018 in our hearts.
On all levels except physical, it is 2018.
Yeah, except we're glad that Yuzu is better now and, like, back to skating. Mm. That's the only thing. But the 2018 Grand Prix final, especially for men, was really fascinating because he wasn't there.
Yeah, it is wild to me how much our sport has changed since. Like, it doesn't feel like that long of a time. Realistically, but
it almost feels like the end of an era. Like that was the last Grand Prix final of that era.
God, that gives me anxiety, but also you're right, especially with men, because we had like Mick and Voronov who are older, and with ladies, like, we had like Alina, who, God, a lot of people are soft retired. I'm realizing
a lot
now.
Of people are soft retired. Yeah, so we had like Alina, we had, you know, Sofia Samadurova is not soft retired so much as like just the victim of being good in a fed with like
garbage people.
Incredible. Yeah, incredible garbage people. No, I don't think the skaters are garbage. Yeah. But I think that the system is not in her favor, and in any other country she would be fantastic. Maybe she does she have ancestry from some other smaller Eastern European country she could go to, because she would really do well.
Girl, I'm sure she does. Like, if she really wanted to skate for like fucking Lithuania or some shit, I'm sure she could figure it out.
I would love that for her, but I'm not her, so who knows. But yeah, so let's dive into it. I think we are sort of looking at it through the lens of, like, we what do we know now that we didn't know then? Or what did these skaters have in store for them that they had no idea, you know?
Oh, Jesus Christ. You're looking at it like that. I'm just excited to bitch about costumes again.
Yeah, so both. This both ends of the spectrum. Do you want to start with ladies or men?
Let's do ladies. This is a feminist podcast. Let's do ladies.
Let's do ladies. So it was a really great Grand Prix final for Japanese women's skating because we had Kaori Satoko and Rika in her little, like, baby days, Grand Prix, like, senior level debut back in the days of the Claire de Lune and the Beautiful Storm. We're going to say this again and again. Everybody has improved so much, but especially the skaters like Rika who were babies 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. Like, she's just come so far. Like, she makes facial expressions now.
Wow, she's learned that. Emoting is good. No, it's so exciting because I remember, like, this was the first thing we got to chat about, like, 15 ages ago. And I think that original Lost episode recording was about 5 hours because we didn't know how to do this. And also we had so much to say and we were like, this is the height of everything. And now looking back, like, 2.5, 3 years later, it's like, oh my god, everyone is so much better now, which is just exciting and good.
Yeah, really, it just felt so high stakes that year, and I don't know why, but it was crazy because it was like, is Rika gonna hit her triple axel? Is Lisa gonna hit her triple axel? I mean, if you look at the Russian women, like, that was Lisa's comeback year, when no one thought she was gonna have a comeback from being, you know, like a childlike star, as they all tend to be. A childlike empress. Hey, I did it. I made a fun joke.
We should do a podcast and you can make fun jokes.
We should have a podcast. Maybe this is the year we start a podcast. But yeah, and then Sofia Samadurova was like having her amazing year that she never quite managed to replicate, which again, I guess I don't think is really her fault. No. And also Alina Zaginova was there. It was half Russian, half Japanese. Just two countries in the Grand Prix final.
Yeah, I remember back then that looked surprising to me. It was like, oh, look at, like, just two flags out of six people. And then the following year we had that moment of like, is it just gonna be Russians?
Yeah, to me, like, I don't know, yeah, back then it was like, we want lots of different countries, and then ever since then it's been like, is anyone who's not Russian gonna go? So even having like three Japanese skaters feels like, okay, well, at least it wasn't like six Russians. Yeah. Which, like, not necessarily shade to Russia, but, like, you know, it's diversity of country representation at the very tip top has not improved since then.
Yeah, not really. If anything, it's gotten weirder. But also we haven't had a lot of Grand Prix finals since. Like, who knows?
Yeah, that's the case. That's true. Who knows what it would have been this year? But yeah, it was very strange to watch Alina Zaginova back in her heyday, like hot off the heels of her gold medal back when she was like the queen of the sport, no contest. It was always a matter of like, because she was getting that fresh Olympic gold medalist scoring.
It almost makes me feel sad now, looking back. I mean, I'm still not a fan of a lot of what she does, but knowing how things panned out for her with her gentle self-retirement and going into being a TV star and everything, I'm sure she's extremely happy and probably having more fun than she ever did as of right now. But it's just, I don't know, it made me sad to see her back in her, like, career glory, like, peak. Mostly because she does not look like she's having a good time. Is that fair to say? Is that fair to say?
Absolutely. I think so. She looked really scared. And, like, yeah, she does kind of have scared face. But, like, I sort of don't buy that that's all of it. Because she doesn't really look scared now. Yeah. And she has the same face, more or less. So she just has that classic Atari, like, oh my god, I'm terrified kind of face all the time. And by that, I mean, like, Atari girl. Atari herself doesn't have an expression.
Yeah, but I will not judge people who do, you know, cosmetic procedures to themselves. Because I would if I had the money. But I don't think Atari could make an expression if she tried.
Yeah, I was explaining this to her. We watched a lot of this with our friend Jamie, who hadn't seen it, and is just sort of like, hi, Jamie, if you hear this. We were like, yeah, you know, listen, like, no shade to people who do Botox, like, do what you want with your face, it's all good. But if you're trying to dodge the reputation of being cold and unfeeling, and also you can't move your face, that's, like, not making you look great. It's not helping.
It just always reminds me of that scene in A Cinderella Story. You know the one? When the mom picks the sisters up and they're very upset because everything's gone to shit and she can't stop smiling and they're like, why are you smiling? And it's just because her face is frozen.
Okay, but can I say something insane? Yes. How much money would you pay to watch a skating movie where Jennifer Coolidge plays a Terry? Because I would give everything for
that. I would sell my house for that.
Yeah, I would take out a fucking mortgage on, I don't even own a house, but we would mortgage our fictional cottage that we would buy.
We would mortgage the metaphorical studio.
Yeah, maybe we should devote all our Patreon money to that going forward. I want to see, like, a Christopher Guest, like, Best in Show style skating movie.
You know how people used to think that I, Tonya was, like, a serious film and not a mockumentary? We should recreate the exact same, like, very dramatic, serious documentary, but it's just like a slice of life mockumentary about the Atari camp.
Can Parker Posey be Megan Duhamel for some reason?
Sure. Yeah, why not?
Just because it works?
Yeah, why not?
I think so.
Megan, what I really need to know now is who would play Danny G?
You know,
here's my immediate pitch.
I almost...
Ryan Reynolds.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say, like, Bradley Cooper. He's not really built the same way, but I think about how funny he was in Wet Hot American Summer. Like, he gets that type of humor.
He does, but he... Like, Ryan Reynolds looks the part. Like, pull up a picture of Ryan Reynolds right now and try to imagine him in A Kiss and Cry.
Yeah. Or, like, what about, like, John Mulaney?
That would be the funniest thing that's ever happened to me.
Like, I don't know why, I just think that he would bring the right energy.
Oh, this is, we can, this episode is about 15 minutes long. Just call it. This is it.
And then I want Christopher Guest to be Sergei Dudikov.
While you're thinking, can I just real quick pitch you, if this is like an extended Russia comedy verse, I would like to suggest Colin Mochrie as Mission because he has no hair.
Oh my God.
That's the only justification. We can make him like gain some weight for the part and people will be like, oh my God, he's such a method actor, because he's the only like funny bold old white guy that I think is funny and deserves jobs.
I know. I want to say I can't think of the name of the actor. It's like, I feel like Hot Sergei has to be one of those actors that's like a really hot Hollywood actor and like does serious stuff, but then also randomly does comedy, and it's like they absolutely don't have to, but they're so funny. Like John Hamm, but like 20 years younger.
Who are you thinking? And like, what would I have seen? Whoever you're thinking about.
I don't know, because it's not that specific. It's like a vibe.
Yeah, no, I get the vibe.
I don't know when I think of it.
Yeah, I agree.
Like Dan Stevens or someone, but like not blonde. I don't know, cut all this.
I will not. This is funny, and I enjoy talking about the comedy. So anyway, we're producing this with our Patreon money now. Thank you so much for supporting this incredible life-changing...
Sorry to charity.
sorry to this man. We have a very important...
Charity starts at home, and this is our home now because we sold it to make this movie happen. So. Anyway.
Back to 2018.
So Alina actually didn't do perfectly, and I remember that being, like, such a controversy at the time because she had been just doing so perfectly every time.
Yeah. I have a confession to make, which is that returning to this season's program set, I was excited to hear a Carmen.
I have missed her.
Like, did I want to hear this particular Carmen? Maybe not, but, like, it started and I was like, oh, fuck yeah, fucking Toreador, let's go. Which hasn't happened in a hot second.
Yeah, I understand why we needed to give it a rest, but I miss it. Mm. It's like, there are a handful of war horses that I'm like, why don't we hear? Like, we don't hear a lot of Rachmaninoff right now either. And I was like, bring back those classics, man. But I think as we get towards the Olympics, like, God willing, it happens.
Rachmaninoffs. A Swan Lake, someone will maybe pull out. We haven't had a Swan Lake for a hot sec.
We haven't.
That's my prediction.
Can
I? I'm just making confessions. This is my confessions episode. We started talking about Carmen, and I had to click back into my Audacity window to just see the apparitions on my sound waves. I'm just waiting for her to come back. Carmen.
I know, yeah. This would be the perfect episode for her to guest. For those who are not longtime listeners, the first like season or so that we did this show, we used to have a ghost named Carmen who would visit us when we talked about Carmen and screw with our audio.
Yeah, she lives in
And it was absolutely bedroom. That and not the fact that we were amateur podcasters making amateur mistakes.
No, she lives in my bedroom and she likes to fuck with things every once in a while. She's kind of a poltergeist, but it's chill. But we know from like ghost hunting documentaries and stuff that ghosts like to take over other people's sound waves to communicate. So I'm wondering if I could use my Audacity as a spirit box.
That'd be really cost effective.
Yeah, right?
At Audacity, can your software be used as a spirit box? Let's find out.
This would be a fucking terrifying moment for something to actually be on this tape.
Yeah, have fun editing this. Anyway, I think that at the time, I was aware that Satoko Miyahara was robbed, but in retrospect, it's even worse. It was, like, so disgusting to me how low she was scored for those performances.
It's criminal. Watching it happen, and especially, like, we're fresh off of, like, Japanese Nats right now. Like, we have the comparison of a couple of years and all of that. I don't remember being mad enough. I should have been so much more mad. Like, her scoring fucking nearly 20 points under Rika and a solid 10 points under Alina in her short is deeply insane to me. And I know it was a deep field and I noted like everyone did good. Like it was a good event, but it's, I don't understand. I mean, I do. They keep like fucking cutting her fucking PCS on top of her under rotations, but
yeah, it's, I mean, I honestly don't even care about the pre-rotations because plenty of people under rotate and don't get called for it. And I think I didn't really appreciate that at the time. Yeah. And I think too, I don't know, at the time I was suffering from that thing of like, this event is happening live and I've really looked forward to it. And so I want to have a good time and enjoy it. And so I convinced myself that it didn't matter. But now in retrospect, I'm like, it mattered because Satoko deserved better than that. She did not deserve to be 10 points behind Alina.
Just fucking deeply insane. I'm pulling up the... I like being mad, so I'm pulling up the protocols from the short. I just want to look at
local Aries Moon pulls up sports scores from 3 years ago to be mad.
Just to be mad. See, here's the thing, though. The only thing that she got negative GOE on was her LUTs. Just barely, because apparently they called that under-rotated. The rest of her short was fine, and she still ended up with, like, 67 points, which, like, there is no world in which Satoko Miyahara deserves PCS below 34. Like, below 35. She scored, like, a 34.9 in her PCS.
It feels sacrilegious to even think that.
Like, it doesn't make sense. Like, I'm looking at it, and I'm like, how do you make sense of this?
It's just one of those unsolved mysteries. Like, we may get to the bottom of the ghost in your room, but we're never gonna get to the bottom of where those PCS points went. Another thing I want to say about the Japanese ladies is that it was really crazy to see both Satoko and Rika still skating with Miya Hamada because they've both since left. Although, I think Rika might still be, like, partially under Miya Hamada, if I'm not mistaken, but she's been spending a lot of time with Stefan and Champéry this year, and Satoko has since gone to Lee Barkel in Canada, so.
A lot has changed. I know I'm gonna keep saying that, but it's weird to me how much has changed. Also weird to me, I just opened the free skate protocols, and it's funny to see Rika leading in the free with minus fives across the board on her triple axel. And then you scroll down and Lisa is third, but she scored pretty decently on her triple axel. So that's...
You know, I remember that year being difficult for Lisa to really prove, like, we would see the triple axel with our own eyes every time, and they would be so, so, so harsh on her for even just, like, a three turn at the end, or, like,
yeah,
it's not absolutely perfect. And even up till this day, now, anybody else does any kind of triple axel, and it's like, oh my god, they fell on their ass, but it was fully rotated, that's amazing, give them lots of points. Like, Lisa never got the benefit of the doubt for that, and it was so weird. It was like they were, like, upset that she was, I mean, not to be conspiracy theory, but it felt like they were upset that she was trying to overstay her welcome by being over the age of 18.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just so weird to me. There's a tiny boy at my rank who is practicing his triple axel on a harness, and it is terrifying to behold because he is just so tiny, little skater boys are just so little. And sometimes they just get caught in the skate harness and shit. No, but really, it's the sound his takeoff makes. It's just fucking scary. It's so impressive to me when tiny children are willing and able to do insane things.
It's less impressive to me than when adults do it because they're small and their bones are made of jelly. But
yeah, but
I've never been a fearless person even as a small child.
Oh, so. I used to be terrifying. I would be the kid who like climbs to the top of like something in the playground and like hangs upside down and shit. Which explains a lot. Most of my brain damage, it explains.
Yeah. You know, to get back to Alina, I think it's sad because this season and this Grand Prix final were so exemplary of the kind of skating that I don't like to see from her and the Russian girls. And then the following season, she went on to be so much more expressive and mature and look like she was having fun on the ice when she did compete. And she just like got kind of, I don't know, it seemed like her camp wasn't happy with her. By all accounts, they were like being really awful and she was having a bad time and getting burnt out and leaving. And it sucks that when she was having fun and doing the kind of skating that it seemed like she wanted to do and we wanted to see, it didn't go so well. So that makes it even worse to then go back and see like kind of the boring, rushed, over the top, scared looking skating just get like perfect scores.
I don't know if I've just gotten, I agree with you. I don't know if I've just gotten like more jaded or I've just spent like 2 years, you know, having people to actively talk to about this, but it's completely unsettling to me how it feels grotesque watching someone who visibly looks so uncomfortable like perform really well. It makes me feel like I'm watching a dark and edgy documentary about someone for whom things don't turn out well.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's even more stark because I do get that feeling whenever I look at like Kamila Valieva or, you know, Anna Sherbakova, but we don't know exactly what's going on with them because we're kind of still in the part of their narrative where, like, nothing has come out to say that they're having a bad time explicitly yet. Whereas, like, Alina, you know, we are at that part where we know that she, you know, was, like, having Atari say awful things to her and was getting burnt out and was leaving the sport for who knows how long. So, yeah, it's hard. And it's like, we still see it every day. And I don't know, it's funny that we were like, we're going to go back to 2018 and have this amazing time. And it ended up being kind of depressing in some ways.
Yeah, it's just, I don't know, like hindsight is, you know, a whole deal. I'm not going to say 2020. It's just, I don't know, for Alina in particular, I do not agree with, you know, making a living hanging out with known transphobic piece of garbage fucking Alexei Yagudin on national TV. However, if you like just look at her socials, and I know that people, you know, I know that social media is like fucking fabricated, but if you just look at like candids of her, she looks like she's having such a good time now, like skating shows and like hosting stuff and getting to wear cool dresses and being, you know, a person, a TV personality or like whatever she is. It just makes me sad.
Yeah.
That she had to go through a bunch of shit. And you're right. It's so, so upsetting that it's an ongoing, like she's not precedent, unfortunately.
Yeah. Let's
move on.
Yeah, I'm like depressing myself. And I can't even, like, Sofia Samadurova's performance was so triumphant and gorgeous and joyful. And like, even that in retrospect makes me sad because like, I just thought she was going everywhere. She won Euros that year. And then, I just can't talk about Russia anymore.
It's
just
same. Like, 2021, we don't talk about Russia.
I feel like that's like me like studying War and Peace in school. Like, I just can't talk about Russia anymore. It's too sad.
I mean, yeah, but also correct. I think on the after show of our own podcast, I think we get to make the call that Russia is too upsetting. I will say no program ever, as long as I live, will bring me as much unhinged joy as Sofia Samodurova doing burlesque. I think it's chaotic in such an inspiring way.
She really does bring an unparalleled level of like unbridled teenage enthusiasm to the ice that we haven't really seen since on anybody.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is both of her programs, both the burlesque and whatever her short is with the embroidered gloves and the lace-up bag.
Oh, it's the like Mission Impossible.
Oh, yeah,
like,
the
ding-ding-ding-ding.
Yeah,
indeed.
It's just so aggressive. You're right. It's just like this. It's person who hasn't learned how to be chill about things they like yet, which I adore.
I had completely forgotten the fact that that season, like, the ISU announcers were reading aloud their little fun facts about all the skaters. And Sophia's fun fact that she submitted is that she trains with Lisa. Like, how cute is that? That she was just really excited to be there with her friend.
That's adorable. She's just so pure and beautiful and fun. I miss her. I know she's out there. I miss her. I miss seeing more of her. But that season was just untoppable for her, and not just because of her performance and, like, winning Euros and all. I just don't think she has come close to that level of just wild choices in her programs, you know?
And that's really saying something, because this is the season that she's wearing alien makeup and skating to Menomina.
Yeah, but it can't top her burlesque and her lace-up corset back and her bamboleo last year. She's just made many, 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 many choices over the years.
I stan. Because, look, it must be very easy to blend in and as a Russian female figure skater in a field that deep. You gotta be memorable. We haven't talked about Kaori yet, which feels wrong.
We haven't talked about Kaori yet because I will scream.
Go for it.
Okay, first of all, I adore her. We all know that. That's on record many times over. It is so precious to me how much she has grown since. Yeah. She was always incredible and graceful and beautiful. It's wild to me the amount of progress she's made in the past couple of years.
The Benoit effect, the Benoit effect.
Yeah, she just, like, I mean, she made the fucking Grand Prix final. She was, like, she was already very, very good. It's insane to me that she skates with so much more style now. Like, personal defined, not just, like, here's what I've been trained to do and it's good and it's beautiful. She just has flair now and understanding. It's just so good. She's also just always been so precious, and I need her to skate with her hair down again.
It's also probably just the difference between being 18 and being 20 or 21 or whatever she is now.
Yeah, she's 20, and I agree. I mean, yeah, if you think about, I know we keep doing that and it's different, but if you think about, like, you performing as a high school fucking, like, junior versus in college, it's, I'm not saying it's great when you're 20, but it's better.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I remember being in college and looking, like, for the very first time watching the DVD of my 11th grade star turn as Adelaide in Guys and Dolls.
Aww.
And thinking, like, having spent years thinking that was, like, the pinnacle of my career and I would never be that good again. And then watching it and be like, I don't even know how to walk in my fucking high-heeled T-strap Capazios.
Oh, God, that is evocative.
I think that we all have these memories of high school glory
days.
High
heel T-strap Capezios, yeah.
I don't care who you are. I don't care if you went to the Olympics when you were 17. You're just cooler when you're 20.
Absolutely, yeah. And you will be even cooler in your late 20s or hopefully early 30s. I don't know. I'm not in my early 30s, but I do feel like a better person now.
I have more tattoos and piercings and blue hair at 30 than I did at 29. So I think I'm cooler now.
I'm so proud of you. I got my first tattoo at 17, so we're not gonna talk about that. I very much played Vendla in Spring Awakening in my senior year of high school with a tattoo on my back.
Yeah, that seems right.
Right? Just real edgy.
Just all of it seems right to me. So, you know, we're looking back on our important things that happened to us, which were High School Musicals, and, you know, the girls at the GPF are looking back at important high school things that happened to them, which was international top ranked competitive figure skating. It's all the same.
Listen,
really.
Some of us are going into competitive figure skating in our late 20s, and that's also fine. We all have different stories.
We all have different stories. Maybe Kaori Sakamoto will join the community theater in 10 years.
That would be joyful. I would move to fucking, like, Japan or Champaria or wherever she is to see her in, like, a community theater production of fucking Guys and Dolls.
Is it bad that I now want it? I want there to be a Fiddler on the Roof where all the daughters are played by the Team Japan skaters.
A Fiddler on the Roof. Sounds crazy, no? And it'd be fucking Daisuke playing Tevye just because he can't let go of that spotlight.
No, but also that would fucking slap. Are you kidding me? Daisuke? Okay, can we cast this right now? Because I can't not do this. Also, when I was taking Japanese in college, we did watch a Japanese version of Fiddler on the Roof.
Japanese musical theater is very good.
I just remember, like, because we were learning the names for family.
Aww.
And so it was like, Oni-san, Oni-san. But yeah, no, I feel like Rika would be Chava, right? Because she's like the wee child. And then, like, Kaori would be Hoddle, and then the oldest would be Satoko, would be Zeidel, because she's like practical and quiet, right?
Yeah, that would be beautiful. And then the rest of them, like fucking Reino Matsuike, would be one of the little ones who's just like there to like pester her older sisters.
I feel like Mai would be one of the younger sisters, not because she's actually younger, but because she's small.
Yeah. Oh my god, I'm just imagining the matchmaker choreo with the laundry on ice.
Can we? I'm sorry. I know that we already have tried to greenlight a film like in the last 20 minutes, but scratch that. I need to see this ice show. I need to see Fiddler on the Roof on Ice presented by Team Japan. Can we cast the men right
yes.
now? Yes. So obviously, Dai is Daddy Tenya.
Yes, is.
Wait, who's the mom? Is Kana the mom?
She has they can, like, to, yeah.
Ice dance together?
Kana has to be Goldie so they can Sunrise Sunset, Do You Love Me, all of that shit.
If I at age 14 could be Golda in my middle school production, I believe that Kana Muramoto can do this as well.
Can I pitch you your boyfriend Keiji Tanaka as Perchik?
I'm glad because I was going to, but it sounds more, it sounds less biased coming from
no,
you.
No, I think it's correct. I think he can... You know, he shows up and he has highlights and muscles and he wants to join the revolution.
Also, like, he and Kaori are already BFFs, yeah. So they could, like, JoJo pose together. It'd be cute.
Here's my most unhinged pitch.
Good.
Are you ready?
Extremely.
Yuzuru Hanyu, two-time Olympic gold medalist, should gender-swapped, cis-swapped play for Umasara just so he can have, like, a dramatic step sequence while fully screaming and being completely irrelevant to the plot.
Okay, I need you to know that I generally mean it hyperbolically. I really almost just peed my pants. And...
Can you imagine my favorite Tato Nyao step sequence with the running to the what it is I hear about you marrying my husband, like, low riff?
Yeah, but like, okay, a couple things here that I need to unpack for a minute.
No. I wrote one, my dissertation, no, Fiddler, I'm correct.
No, okay, one, it would have to be with the costuming from the most recent Broadway yes. revival where Fumisara has like really long nails.
Yes.
And then the other thing I wanted to say was, realistically, in a world where they would not gender swap him because the world is unfair, I think what would actually happen is he would play the fiddler and they would have him just have like a bunch of solo numbers yeah. where he's like doing all this artistic fiddler shit, and then he would get top billing but not be in it enough that they would actually have to pay him a lot of money because they would cut corners that way.
Of course, that's actually very smart. I do want to see him in drag screaming though.
But don't you want to see him in the fiddler costume? Because like, isn't that like so high-key sexy with like the coat?
Yeah, I think that would be beautiful, and he could just like play the whole like metaphor of it. That's actually way smarter, but I stand by what I said.
Yeah, also like, remember how like a few months ago we were like, I don't know about Satoko Miyahara wearing a Star of David.
welcome to a Team Japan does the entirety of Fiddler on the Roof. Okay, here's I'm gonna say something that I will not cut, but what if we just get like Dmitry Aliev and Sasha Samarin and like a bunch of them to do the Russians doing the bottle dance? You just get actual Russians to be the villains of the story, is what I'm saying.
That complicates things so
I don't give a shit
so
though.
Much for me. Okay, yeah,
care.
That's true. It's our so I need to know before we move on and actually talk about skating again, which we were dangerously close to doing this episode, but thank God.
Who plays Laser Wolf?
Off, so.
And also, who's Shoma playing? Because Shoma has to be in this. Is he the Taylor model yeah. Kamzoil?
No, okay, so a couple things. Okay, so I need Yamato Tamura to be Laser Wolf. I need fucking, the matchmaker is going to be, I don't know, can it be Mihoko? Like, does she skate? She probably skates, right? Because she's a coach. But if we're going like strictly skaters, I would say like, oh, fucking Midori Ito.
Oh my god, that's brilliant. Yes.
So Shoma would either be model or what's the name of the Russian kid?
Fietka.
I think he's model because he's so like small and timid.
Yeah, I think it would be
chaotic.
So cute as model though.
And he would just be doing like quads to like Miracle of Miracles and just like popping the fuck
off. Oh my god, landing like a combo jump on Wonder of Wonders, Miracle of Miracles.
Yeah. And then like having like a cheeky landing, like that's a cheeky lando.
This is gorgeous. Since we're talking about Shoma, should we just talk about boys now?
Yeah, but who's playing the Russian kid? And then we can move on. What's his name again? You just said it. Fiedka?
Fiedka?
Kazuki.
Yeah, sure.
Done.
Done.
Kazuki. Done. Kazuki would actually maybe... Kazuki might be a better model, but it's fine.
No, but Shoma gets that billing because he's an Olympic medalist.
Yeah, it's true. All right, well, thanks for listening this far. Let's talk about the...
Let's talk about boys. So dramatically, like we mentioned, Yuzu was not there. He pulled out and it was like a whole deal. I remember when that was like news. Like, oh my God.
Yeah, and like... It's just funny to me, too, because I remember, like, Keegan getting called up as first alternate, but it being very much like, oh, well, Keegan doesn't have the tech content. He's just not up to snuff with the other five. And how weird that was compared to the following year, where it was so unbelievably close that there were, like, eight dudes who all legit could have gotten into the Grand Prix final, and it was literally, like, hairs of tiebreakers of points.
Yeah. And also, for whatever it's worth, Keegan didn't place last.
It's true. Keegan actually did amazing. And he did deserve to be there, in my opinion. And I'm glad he has new programs now. But, you know, it was fun to revisit Floppy Doll Man and Floppy Chaplain Man.
I think I was, like, so done with Floppy Man in general by the end of that season. But, like, going back now, you know, when he's not either Wedding Keegan or, like, Dark Old Black Keegan, it's like, oh my God, that's right. He's just a floppy prince. It's very charming.
Yeah, you were down to flop a little bit.
Yeah, I would love to flop a little bit.
Yeah, kind of crazy. I think, once again, I feel attacked when I hear Michael Bublé sing.
I think that's a universal experience.
It's because on some level I know that he covered Santa Baby and changed it to Santa Buddy. Buddy so it wouldn't be gay.
He's like, hey Santa, can I get some presents? No homo though.
But methinks that he doth protest too much because can you imagine what securely heterosexual man would be concerned that Santa Claus would think he was hitting on him? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I feel like if you have to justify to Santa that you're not gay, you have to go to therapy at that point. Like, I'm not saying that you're gay, because the narrative that people who are aggressively homophobic are gay is queerphobic in and of itself. I'm just saying, maybe talk to someone.
Because the thing about Santa is, like, he sees you when you're sleeping, he knows when you're awake, like, he knows your whole deal. And yeah, so if Santa, you feel guilty in front of him, maybe examine that.
Maybe... What if you know in your heart of hearts how you feel about other humans and your sexual attraction to them or romantic attraction? And that's why you need to, like, really, really, really put your foot down in front of Santa, because you know that he sees you when you're sleeping. He knows what you're thinking. Santa knows.
So I think what we're saying here is that Michael Bublé's gay sex dreams are so fucking depraved that he's worried that Santa's going to give him coal for the disgusting things that his subconscious leads him to see in his slumbering hours.
Okay, look, who amongst us, though, has not had a spooky Santa hell dream?
Yeah, but the thing that Michael Bublé needs to understand is that Santa doesn't care who you fuck at when you're sleeping or awake.
Well, the only thing is if you're sleeping, like if you're into somnophilia and all of that, just like make sure that you've gotten explicit consent with your partner in whatever way you want to negotiate that.
Yeah, I was thinking like dream sex, but you're right. There's a whole like avenue down there. I didn't really think about
it. Oh, I think about it often and a lot.
And Santa knows that you do.
Santa knows and he's proud of me.
Santa's a fucking freak. Santa's FetLife profile is popping.
I'm sure there's someone on FetLife who's like catfishing a Santa. This is one of those times, sometimes I tell my mom that I'm gonna just like close my eyes and give her the Patreon feed without her having to be my Patreon supporter, just because she's been paying for shit for me for nearly 30 years. And then we do this bit and I'm like, I'm just gonna continue to not let my mother anywhere near Patreon.
Yeah.
She doesn't need your this. My mom's a nice
she's
person.
She's too pure.
My mom's a nice person.
So is Keegan Messing, and I regret to inform that he's the reason we got here, but...
No, he's not. Michael Bublé was the reason we got here. Why we're here, though, can we talk about Meg Brigina, who I miss dearly?
Yes, speaking of parents.
I miss Meg Brigina's energy so much. I don't think anyone will ever do it the way he does it.
No.
Just fucking unparalleled.
It's just, he's been a dad since before he had a child. Like, and I know that, like, we joke the dad-daddy thing. Like, yes, he's a daddy. Yes, he's attractive. It's like the dad rock energy is still so strong, even though Danny wasn't even pregnant yet at that time, if my math
You don't
is
have
correct.
To be a dad to be a daddy.
I don't know what else to say, like...
Thank you so much for tuning in. This has been a review of the 2018 Grand Prix Final.
We didn't get to most of the guys, yeah, no. But we sure did get to a lot of bullshit.
Should we real quick talk about men? Some more men.
Yeah, it was weird to see Shoma back with Mihoko, because now I'm like, what happened there? We still don't know. That's got to be on the Unexplained Mysteries.
It's one of those things where I'm like, we were looking at, but, or like, we were seeing, but not looking at so many things.
Yeah.
It's fascinating.
And then it's like, what are we looking at but not seeing now? Oh, shit.
You know, you can never know, and you can be very aware and still not know. Can we talk about how...
Which is why it's better to be ignorant. You heard it here first.
Just be very dumb, 2021. What was I gonna say?
Remember Voronov? Remember Sergei Voronov?
I remember him because I got to see him at IDF the following year, and I miss him. I know this is just me clinging to a past that we cannot go back to, but I miss Sergei Voronov.
Yeah, it was nice to see some, like, some uncles... some old timers, some geriatric 30-year-olds in the GPF. Especially because we were saying how, like, had it happened this year, it would have likely been a lot of really young people. Like, Yuma Kageyama probably would have made it. And, you know, it would have been, like, a changing of the guard kind of time.
Oh, that just gives me intense anxiety again. I think Voronov just has an energy that, especially with, like, Russian men, and we know that I deeply enjoy some of the Russian men, I don't think anyone's matching this particular energy, which I miss, but he has been, like, coaching, you know, just, like, novices and, like, children and stuff. So I'm really hoping that he's passing on this Voronov vibe to a new generation that we will live to see in, like, 5 years.
I think that the reason that this particular Grand Prix Final was so full of men who had their own particular style is because a lot of them are older, and like even Keegan, like being what was it, like 26 at the time or something like that, like that's a
incredibly
little older
old.
Than, you know, and like he has his own particular style, and so I think that it's I just think it takes some time for you to get there, and that it's that like self-assuredness that like Mick and Sergei had. But on the other end of the spectrum, we had baby Junwon Cha, who we have kind of not seen a lot from since then because puberty hit him like a truck.
I hope he's had a lot of time now with, you know, less comps and stuff to like deal with his new body. I really hope like next season we get to see like the glorious grown-up return.
I mean, we sort of did this year because he did kind of, like, have, like, a little sassy program moment, but I think in terms of the technical content,
I would like to see, like, full, like, he knows where his limbs are, 2021, 2022 kind of situation, you know?
Yeah, and I was wondering if I would look back at the Romeo and Juliet in particular and think, like, oh, we've seen so many Romeo and Juliets. Did this stand the test of time? I still think that's the best one that I can think of in the past 5 years or so. Like, I can't, anybody in the last 5 years or so done Romeo and Juliet better than that? I don't think so.
No, absolutely not. It's the mix of, like, you know, beautiful classical prince in love, but also, like, club. And also the Juliet moment, which we've talked about a billion times. And he doesn't even hit it that well at the Grand Prix Final. He's a little behind, God bless him. But it's still fucking iconic. Still so good.
And it's a testament to Shaylin, too, because it's her choreography, right?
Yeah.
Because I'm going to be, like, totally impartial and honest and say that Junwon, at age however old he was at that time, 15, 16, was not, like, an incredible artist. Like, he was performing quite well. But I think even since then, he's, you know, gotten rid of some of the junior arms and the, you know, just going through the motions. But, like, what he was given to work with was so strong that it was, like, impossible to not be a banger.
Yeah. It's one of those programs where I'm like, can you show it to me, like, now, though? I would, like, love to return to it just to see.
If he brought that back for, like, a gala or, like, All That Skate, if that happens this year, like, I would lose my ever-loving fucking mind.
Absolutely same. Yeah, I think it would be fucking incredible.
Not that you can really be Romeo forever, because he's, you know, eventually you get too old, but he's still, what, like, some kind of teenager.
Yeah,
I feel like it works.
Still, it still works. He's, he's, like, 19. I feel like that's acceptable for a Romeo.
Oh, yeah. I want him to come back. He's another one that I'm, like, had such a breakout season and then didn't quite live up to it, but I have high hopes for going forward.
Yeah, I really hope that, you know, the time he's had kind of away from competing due to circumstance is actually very, very helpful for him in terms of, like, you know, getting used to a new body.
I think that we have to end with Shoma because he's had the most happen to him. I know, but I think we should talk about Nathan and then Shoma, because I think Shoma went through the most in this period of time.
I also don't have a lot to say about Nathan. I have two things to say. One, it is insane to me that he's gotten even better since, because he was incredible already. Two,
just much better. Not even just a little bit, but much better.
It's the same thing that we're... I'm not saying he's old, because he's like, what, like 21 years old, but it's the same thing of like knowing your style now and knowing your body and how it moves that we were mentioning with the very old men in their late 20s. The other thing I want to say about Nathan is that Land of All makes me cry every single time. And
oh yeah,
I thought I was gonna like, you know, over-exaggerate for it a bit. And like, we were watching with our friend Jamie, and I wanted to like, I wanted them to know that this is like a very moving program. So I was like, oh, this makes me cry every time, LOL. And then a minute into it, I was fully weeping again. It's so good.
It's so good. And like, it was so right for him where he was at that time too, because now I think he is a more expressive artist. So he can do La Boheme and he can do, I don't know, what the fuck is he doing this year? Philip Glass and what?
And the Canción del Mariachi.
Yes. He can definitely like really eat that up right now. But at that time, I think that was like really, that really pushed him to a new level. And it's crazy, even technically, he's like more consistent now. Because I remember, I think after that point, he was so solid for so long and so consistent that I got really used to him being almost flawless every time. Yeah. But he really did make a couple little oopsies at that point.
Yeah, he had some wobbles and some whoopsies, which I think is fine.
That sounds like a song from, like, the 20s. Like, a wobble and a whoopsie. With my baby and me.
Oh, Jesus Christ. That's his exhibition skate for next year.
Please God. I mean, he is always trying to find new genres to tap into. Can I suggest a bullshit bit song that I just made up two lines of?
I feel like you would appreciate that, though.
He would. I think I like to think everyone I admire would think I was funny.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's finish off by talking about the one and only Shoma Uno, who at the time, we had no fucking idea that he was mere months away from like blowing from up his full breakdown. Which is like a massive mood.
Looking back at yourself at the end of 2018 and being like, oh, I had no idea.
Yeah, like, I had no idea I was going to start a podcast. Shoma had no idea he was going to have his own little gamer gate and run away from home and, like, Goldilocks through every single skating camp in the world until he settled at the gay paradise in the Alps, Champéry.
That's such a journey. I know we said it at the end of last season, but like, if anyone from like the current competing ranks of skaters deserves a biopic right now, it's him. Because that film would already be deeply unhinged.
No, I'm serious. And like, I remember I was talking to some of my college friends like right after Japanese Nationals, and they knew I had, like this year, and they knew I had stayed up really late to watch. And so they like politely asked me how it went, even though they didn't like know figure skating. And I tried to think of like what's a fun anecdote for anybody. And so I told them about Shoma's like journey over the past couple of years. And they were all like, these are like, you know, like sports bros. And they were like, whoa, where's that movie?
Right? Like, right, that's a movie that should exist. Like, that's like the whatever that film is, Moneyball of figure skating.
Money Blades. That's a cool name for like a rapper.
Lil Money Blade.
I'm Lil Money
too
Blade.
White and Eastern European to be making this joke. I don't know.
You don't have rap in Eastern Europe? Yes, you do.
We do, and it's actually really good. But it's always like it's really, really good, and then you're like, should you be? There's always like a twinge of like cultural appropriation in a way which feels incredibly performative.
Yeah, rap is hard in that way because it's like disseminated so much throughout the world that it's like, yeah, it's really hard to tease out at this point. But yeah, anyway, I don't remember how we got here. So Shoma Uno, Lil Money Blades himself. I'm sorry, but like this fucking Stairway to Heaven, I know is not everybody's favorite.
I think it's incredible.
But the eggplant velvet suit, the step sequence, oh my God, iconic. One of my favorite Shomas, for real.
Honestly, same. I think it's, this is hard. This is a hard choice, but I think it's up there in terms of favorite Shomas.
The greatest Shoma.
The greatest Shoma.
This is the greatest Shoma.
This is the greatest Shoma.
Shoma. Jesus Christ.
This is bad.
I think that, yeah, I don't know. Yeah, the Moonlight Sonata was, like, iconic in that it was choreographed really well, but if it makes him happier to do things like Greatest Spirit, no, just Great Spirit, not Greatest. Great Spirit and...
This is the Greatest Spirit.
Dancing on my own and more, like, contemporary stuff, then clearly I'm, like, happy for him. But it was just a golden age of at least as a viewer of Shoma, I think.
I'm so curious to see what he decides to do going into next season. Because he's clearly, you know, with all of his traveling and stuff, he didn't really have the time to be making new choices for music. I mean, it's been hard for many a reason for people to, like, not reuse programs going into this current allegedly still happening season. It's interesting to me, you know, like we said, like, inching ever closer to hopefully an Olympic year and everything. I'm curious to see what he chooses.
Yeah, especially because these were programs that he had selected before he left Mihoko, yeah. And so the next round are going to be the first ones that are, like, the Stefan programs. I mean, like, I don't know if he would choreograph or not, but, like, I think regardless of whether he did or not, oftentimes from the Champéry people, we see some very unhinged choices. If we think of, like, Dennis. Well, Koshiro, actually, I think Koshiro tends to pick really cool stuff.
But Dennis.
Maybe we'll get Shoma in some yellow pants.
Oh my god, you know? Please. That would be incredible. Yellow pants, purple shirt.
Can't lose.
You have the power of God and Anime on your side.
You have the power of God and Stefan Lambiel on your side.
Amen. Let's call this.
Let's call it. We're never going
to
top that.
Yeah, we both like to be the flower in this bit.
We both like to be the flower.
I will not cut this. If anyone knows what we're referencing, please let me know. It's important to me. Thank you so much for listening.
Shout out to those of you who know what we're talking about with the flower tweet.
The flower tweet. Thank you so much for listening. Happy New Year. We hope you're healthy and safe and, you know, heading into whatever comes next with some optimism and a clear mind.
Wow, well said. Yeah, I couldn't say it any better. Thank you so much for subscribing. You guys are the absolute best, and you continue to keep the lights on in our studio. And we swear to God, we probably won't actually use this money to greenlight dubiously culturally appropriate of ice shows and or movies starring comedians from the 90s. But
I mean, unless they're never down. In which case, we'll reconsider. But you'll get, like, producer credits if we do.
Yeah, so there's that, you know. So look forward to that in 2021.
We have some exciting shit coming up on the main feed.
We truly do.
And we hope you stick around. That's all.
Oh, yeah. Bye-bye.
Love you. Bye.
Happy New Year.